Chapter 2. We found our horses outside the manor and hastily tied off all of our bags to their saddles. Then I helped each of my women up into their seats and climbed up onto my own steed. None of my women, except Edeny and Josephine, had much, if any, experience riding a horse. But they competently managed and held the reins tightly in their hands. Edeny kicked her heeled shoes against the horse's side and circled us once with a serene smile. Her violet eyes swiveled from the horse's reins to the gravel in front of her with a practiced ease I only associated with skilled horsewomen. "You look so comfortable up there," I chuckled. "I don't think I've seen you make that type of expression before."
"Yes, you have,"
the she-wolf scolded with a light-hearted tone.
"I make this expression all the time when I'm next to you, Charles. You may not understand what I'm about to say because it's a phenomenon closely associated with women with abilities. But I feel so connected with this horse. It's like this with all animals, though. But there are a few that I don't particularly enjoy. Like the yapping terriers that my great-aunt used to keep. They'd run along by my ankles and nip at them. What nasty little creatures. It makes me curious, though. Do any of you feel that way, too?"
"Well..."
Josephine started, and then chuckled.
"I'm not a monster girl yet, but yes, and I'm sure I'll feel the same after my transformation process is finished."
Daisy clicked her tongue.
"Yes and no. There are times when I feel more connected with an animal, like if I'm out in the forest and can sense them around me. But this particular horse? Not really. But that might just be my fear of being bucked off talking."
"I love this horse! It's so pretty! Charles, isn't this horse pretty? She has the most beautiful coat I've ever seen. Oh, no offense to our horses back home, but they're just a plain brown color."
"They're so beautiful because each one of them is a different pedigree,"
Edeny explained.
"My mother used to breed them in her free time."
"What kind of pedigree is mine? She's so pretty, and I love her so, so much. I just want to give her a big squeeze."
"Valerie, you have a Malthusian pony. Their temperament reminds me a lot of yours. It's easily excitable, but also anxious when it comes to danger. I wanted horses that you could easily control, and that's why the Malthusian was the best choice for you, my lovely. The Malthusians are generally known for their short, grey-spotted coat, white manes, and dark chocolate-brown eyes."
"Thank you for the gifts, Edeny," I inclined my head. "But what about yours? It's a beautiful horse, but sadly, I don't know much about these types of things."
"Ah, yes. This horse was a present from my mother on my 16th birthday. We rode through the city streets on the eve of my debut into society in an enormous, over-the-top parade. This very horse pulled our carriage, and she's been by my side ever since. I may have hated that stupid parade, but I was so happy to see my beautiful horse pulling our carriage. She's a purebred Percheron, and the only one of her kind to be snow white. The others are an off-white with gray speckles, but she was born the color of snow."
"Can we name them? Oh, please, Edeny, let us name them."
"They're your horses now. Do as you wish with them."
"Wait,"
Josephine gasped.
"You're really giving them to us?"
"Why not? I have no use for them, and I never saw any joy in breeding horses as my mother did. So they were simply sitting in the stables. My servants would take them out to the fields and exercise them, but I never truly was their owner. Selene is the only horse that ever felt like she was mine, so I have no use for the others, and I thought it would be best to give them to you, my sisters. I figured since we'll be leaving Edenhodge soon, all of us should have a horse."
By this time, we'd reached the outskirts of the city, and I kicked the sides of my horse. I rode up to my place beside Edeny, and the Duchess smiled tenderly in my direction. The rest of my women fanned out behind us with Valerie and Daisy on either side of our horses, and Ryan and Josephine at the back. Together we created something like an arrow shape, and if we encountered any returning aristocrats on the road, we'd block them from the path.
"I want to name mine Cleo,"
the feline woman crooned and then patted her steed.
"Do you like that, Cleo? It's a pretty name, isn't it? A pretty name for a pretty girl just like you.
Well, I'm naming mine Ragago Cragnamoak.
The imp woman nodded.
After my beautiful and terrifying mother.
That's...
Edeny hummed.
That's a nice name, Ryan.
I will call him Frag for short.
The black-haired beauty grinned.
Frag means fire in the imp language.
Huh.
Daisy clicked her tongue.
So your mother's name is a bunch of different words, or does it include a title?
My mother's name was Ragagok, and the second part is her title, but the translation is a bit weird, so let me paraphrase. Lady of the Fire and Ugly Face.
Wait.
Josephine stammered and tried to hold back giggles.
Ugly Face? Are you serious? People called her that?
Yes. As I said, the translation is a bit weird, so it could be Terrifying Face or Horrifying Presence, but they all basically mean the same thing.
Well,
The bear girl started and then stopped herself.
Never mind. Sure, that's a lovely title, Ryan, and I'm sure it struck fear into the hearts of your imp enemies.
It did. My mother was the fiercest warrior in the whole of our clan, with the ugliest face. That's the reason she was my mother in the first place. She found my father, challenged him to battle, and beat him. So he had to marry her or go against clan laws.
The more I find out about the impdom,
Josephine started,
the more it sounds like a wild, terrifying, and interesting place to be.
Do you miss it? I asked.
No.
Ryan shook her head and frowned.
I'd much rather be here with you, Charles. I may have been the crown princess of the impdom, but my life here is so much better than it would have been there.
What was the crown princess of the impdom doing down there anyway? I don't think I've ever asked you that.
Sabotaging and attacking the surface dwellers is a rite of passage. It was my test to become an adult and be respected in the imp community.
Well, in a sense, it was a success. Our lives are better now. And we're so happy with you, Charles. You make living worth it. And do we want to talk about your enormous, gigantic penis?
I glanced over my shoulder at the feline woman and smirked. The cat girl's light blues widened out of surprise. Any other time, I would have been a stuttering, sweaty mess. But I'd grown accustomed to this type of talk.
I have to agree. My life is so much better now that I'm a monster girl and have Charles to take care of all of my needs.
He may be a gentleman outwardly,
Edeny commented,
but once you get him in the sheets, he has the savagery of a wild animal. I thirst for our intimate moments constantly. He satisfies me, and yet I can't help but be hungry for more. Charles is the best lover. He takes charge immediately and knows how to move and work my body like magic. It's astounding what he can do to me.
It made me happy to know that my women were satisfied with our sex lives. I'd heard from many aristocrats that I was more than competent in that department, but hearing it from the women that I loved made it even more special. I'd come a long way when I thought about it. I'd been a shy and modest man when I first created Valerie, and now their conversation didn't bother me in the slightest. For the longest time, I thought my women had progressed, but in reality, it was me who'd taken a step forward. And with that, our journey to the mountain started in the late afternoon. I half expected the journey to be long and dreary, but my women kept the conversation light despite where we were going and what we would do. The landscape began to change slowly, and our horses climbed steep hills toward the mountainside, but even then, we were only through the first half of our journey. We stopped to rest for the night deep in the woods and camped out in a large tent that Edeny provided. We slept together, as we usually would back home, in a giant pile of warm limbs. When we woke the next morning, we packed all of the supplies onto our horses' saddlebags, climbed on, and rode deeper into the mountains. A few times we rode past small towns, and I dropped to the back of the party and kept my head low. The citizens of the cities looked much poorer than Edenheart, and as we passed, they merely glanced in our direction with glossy, exhausted eyes.
What's wrong with them?
Valerie whispered over to the Duchess.
They live in the mountains. They don't receive a lot of supplies or food from the capital, especially during the fall and winter. The roads are impossible after the first snowfalls, so they're sickly. We'll pass more towns on the road, farther into the mountains, And I suggest that you don't look. They're much worse.
Why doesn't the Queen do anything?
Daisy asked. Because the Queen doesn't care, I grunted. She doesn't care about anything but the capital and herself. I'm sure that these smaller, more desolate towns have begged for her aid, but their pleas have fallen on deaf ears.
When you're the leader, Charles,
Ryan urged,
we must do everything in our power to help them. They can't waste away like this.
This is what the Queen intended for Edenheart,
Edeny breathed.
Technically, these hamlets are part of my duchy, and I try to take care of them the best I can, but they're feeling the pinch worse than any other city under my control. The Queen is displeased with me, and all of the towns under my rule are suffering.
How utterly disgusting,
Josephine spat.
I can't believe that she'd do something like that.
You have to believe it, I shook my head. This is what she does, and what she's done to hundreds of other smaller towns.
This is actually the first town that we'll attack. We'll take their women and make them part of our army. I'm sure that once they know the truth about the Queen and the state of the world, they'll be clamoring to join our side.
We passed by the town, and my women looked over their shoulders with forlorn expressions. I understood their pain and frustration, and once I was king, I would aid these small cities. The journey to the mountains was long, and as we entered deeper into the mountains on the third and final day, a cold chill overcame us. I'd known it would be colder here, so I'd urged my monster women to bring along heavier clothing with us just in case. We stopped midway to change and now wore light coats and gloves. Right as we were about to reach the end of our journey, Edeny pulled a map out of her saddlebag, glanced at the road ahead of us, and peeked down at the worn parchment in her hands. The Duchess clicked her tongue and rummaged through the bag again, then brought out a folded letter.
The trapper said the road would curve to the right up ahead,
the she-wolf read off.
But we won't be taking the road. We need to veer off to the left through the forest. They said that they cleared a path for us through the trees and are patiently waiting for our arrival.
Should we have brought some soldiers with us?
Ryan asked. No, that'd be too suspicious, I explained. We wouldn't want anyone to see us and a massive group of soldiers moving down the road. Word might get back to the Queen that Edeny and a bunch of other women are traveling around the mountains with a huge army of brutes.
How'd you get so goddamn smart? Sometimes I can't believe how clever you are.
I was born this way, I guess. Given a gift from birth.
I know you say that jokingly, but it's true, Charles. I've never met someone as intelligent as you. Half of the smart aristocrats I've known pale in comparison to your genius. Sometimes I wonder who your mother was, who she could have been, and where you originally came from.
What do you mean? I was born in Edenheart. Or at least I thought I was.
Well, you may not know this since you've never given birth or spent a lot of time with pregnant aristocrats. But most male babies born within the city of Edenheart don't remain there for long, and it's the same for all other towns. The brutes are sent off to the nearest boarding schools, but they are few and far between, especially in the capital, for example. It may be the largest city in the whole country, but there are no boarding schools within. Most of the boys born there are shipped off to different parts of the country.
That's terrible. I've always wondered who my mother was, and I always assumed that it was one of the aristocrats in the city.
It could be anyone. It's sad to say, but the boarding schools don't have much of a filing system, so I'm not sure if we could look into it or not. Well, that's if you're interested. It might be difficult and it might take a long time, but it might lead somewhere. Who knows?
You know, I think I might be interested, I smiled. Thank you. It's so strange to hear those words, especially coming from your mouth, Edeny.
I know it is. And I'm sorry I mistreated you before. Oh, Charles, there's the turn.
I nodded and adjusted the reins in my hand toward the path cut between the mountain's rocky walls and the thick cedar trees. We were pretty high up in the mountains by now, and the cold air stung my lungs, but it was nothing that I couldn't bear. The ground we trod on was fresh earth from where the woodsmen before us cut down the enormous trees and ripped out the trunks. I wasn't sure how far the cave was from the road, but we traveled along the steep mountainside for about an hour before we heard noises off in the distance. The sound reminded me of the Raiju in a way, but this was more guttural and vicious in comparison. Then another sound came ripping out from in between the rocky cliffs. It was much quieter, and I concentrated on it while trying to figure out what it was.
Charles?
Valerie asked.
Well, what is that?
I hear.
Ryan began. It sounds like men screaming, I grunted.
But what was that louder sound?
Josephine whispered. I don't know, but I think we're about to find out. The sounds came even louder now as we came around a big bend in the trees, and I knew within seconds we'd see what was making the awful noise. I breathed in deeply, snapped the reins against my horse's back, and urged it toward the sound. I could tell that my horse was apprehensive, but I urged it on with soft, soothing sounds and managed to force it forward. The wall of stone to the right of us broke open into a large clearing surrounded by massive cliff faces. Men in dark uniforms raced around the soft dirt with their weapons raised, and I noticed too late that some of them were entirely ablaze with orange and blue flames. A few bodies laid on the ground with their limbs wholly torn off and blood oozing into the rubble. Body parts were scattered around the circular clearing, and the trappers screamed so loudly that something like a warbling harmony lifted into the air. My heart hammered in my chest, and sweat beaded on my forehead from the visceral carnage laid out in front of me. I'd seen fights before, even watched as Daisy ripped five guards apart, but this was the work of an animal that wanted nothing more than to destroy and consume for the thrill of it. It didn't matter if the beast was afraid or cornered. It wanted to kill.
Duchess! A man screamed once he noticed us. It started attacking our encampment! It already wiped out most of our numbers! What do we do? Help us!
Edenie's stunning face paled at the horrifying scene in front of us, and her bottom lip quivered. I didn't think she'd ever seen anything like this before. Sure, the aristocrats put on mock wars with each other, but I already knew that the Duchess didn't partake in such things. Even before I'd transformed her. Her violet eyes wavered in their sockets, and her delicate, gloved hands shook with fear and anxiety. I knew it was my time to take charge.
This is what we've been waiting for. Let's draw the drake out and kill it. I want that core in my hands before sundown. Do all of you understand?
Ha! Yes, sir!
Valerie cackled, snapped the reins against her horse's back, and raced forward as she immediately phased out of view.
You there!
I shouted to the trapper sprinting toward us, and he skidded to a stop in front of my horse.
Yes,
the young boy squeaked. Hand over your sword, I demanded, and stand back and watch your new leader slay a mighty beast before your very eyes.
Who are you?
The young man stammered as he scrambled to hand over his broadsword. I'm Charles Rayburn, I barked, took the weapon from his hands, and held it aloft. The future king of this land and leader of the Total Order.